Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker. Today's episode is sponsored by BetBright, home of the 10 million weekly challenge for the duration of the World Cup. My name is Thomas Rooney, and once again, I'm joined by the assistant editor at Squawker, Jake Entwistle. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, really good to be here, Thomas.
Excellent. And the chief writer at Squawker, Mohammed Butt. How's it going, Mo?
Oh, it's fantastic as always. The World Cup is here. Here we go.
And we're delighted to be joined by Dean Ryan from BetBright. How's it going, Dean?
Very well. Delighted to be involved, actually, with you lads on the Squawker Talker. We've got a massive tournament coming up, and thanks for having us on.
No problem at all. And just before we get cracking, talking about England and various other World Cup topics, you've got the 10 million weekly challenge, which I mentioned there, Dean. I don't know if you can just clarify sort of what that's all about and how people can get involved.
Absolutely. We're having a bit of fun with BetBright customers on the way through the World Cup itself. So the 10 million weekly challenge, we're going to give 10 customers over the duration of, it's been going a couple of weeks, but over the duration of the whole tournament, a chance to win a whopping £10 million in the final. Now, what they'll have to do is obviously engage in the weekly challenges across the website on BetBright. It's a few challenges a day they must complete to earn one of those tickets. But 10 lucky customers will have a chance on the day of the final to name the goal scorer, the time of the goal, and the correct score in that final. Get it right, win £10 million. Doesn't sound like it might happen, but you can't win it if you're not in it.
That is very true. Sounds like a good fun competition for this summer, for sure.
Plenty of prizes as well. Yeah, plenty of prizes as well during the competition involved in the tournament. But of course, everyone wants one of those lucky tickets.
Yeah, that would be nice. Okay, thanks for clarifying that. Sounds like good fun. And I'm sure the Squawker guys will be interested in getting involved this summer as the World Cup starts this week. And we are going to start where you'd expect us to start, with England. I'm going to start by asking you, Jake, what did we learn from the friendlies? We had two friendlies, a couple of wins, reasonably solid performance. I think you enjoyed particularly the Costa Rica game from what I saw. So what did England learn from that, and what can they take into the World Cup?
I think we've learned that England will win the World Cup in the summer.
End
of podcast.
Yeah, that was my immediate reaction. And all joking aside, I was actually, again, maybe it's the patriot in me, but I think I'm getting quite excited about this side. The Nigeria game was the cliched game of two halves. We looked very good, very organised and quite fluid in the first half. I really enjoyed Raheem Sterling's role in that. His finishing wasn't maybe up to scratch, and that sort of brings us on to the next point in Costa Rica. But the second half against Nigeria was a bit slow, and we looked on the ropes when they matched us up formation-wise, which, again, could be a worry depending on who we play in the World Cup. But secondly, in the Costa Rica game, I thought the whole game was brilliant. Obviously, it was a completely changed side. Mm-hmm. So I think the main thing that we learned is that England actually have a squad here. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of options that can provide competition for each player. And although Gareth Southgate has said that the formation will be that 3-5-2, I think depending on which personnel we use, you can see very different systems and different tactics implemented in that. Yeah. So the fact that Rashford came in and looked brilliant, obviously absolutely flowing with confidence and scored the goal where Raheem Sterling didn't. I personally still am backing Raheem Sterling to start in those games. That's not to say that Rashford isn't brilliant and didn't look brilliant, but I think given the seasons they've had and Raheem Sterling's ability to sort of wriggle out of tighter spaces, although he won't unleash those 25-yard wobble free kicks that I don't even know how Rashford managed to get that much movement on it, I think we've learned that we've definitely got some different options now and we should get out the group, and there's potential in who we face in the knockout stages of actually going quite far. But all in all, I was watching those games and I was very excited by it.
Yeah, they were magnificent games. The Costa Rica game in particular, I thought was really good. I mean, you can say it's only Costa Rica, but they're a decent side, decent defensive side. They're not as good as they were, but yeah, they still have Keylor Navas in goal. But what struck me was exactly what Jake said, is that he rotated a whole bunch of players, brought in essentially the backups, and England was still really good. You know, they still flowed, they still moved the ball nicely. Rashford was exceptional. I think that's, you know, I agree with Jake. I think he's not going to start. I think Sterling gives you so much in terms of overall play, dribbling, passing, penetration, being able to carry the ball up the field, supporting midfield, but also supporting Kane up front. I think he gives so much in that regard. I think he will get the start. But Rashford is the most incredible plan B. Like, I mean, because it's like all the commentators are saying about, oh, I'd start him because he scores more goals. But I mean, yeah, okay, fine, I get that. But then that also makes him such a lethal option off the bench. You know, Raheem Sterling's tired them out. You know, oh, it's not worked, or he hasn't scored a goal. Bring on Rashford. Rashford's a bit more direct, not quite as finesse, but a bit more direct. Loads of power, loads of pace. Excellent shooting technique. Bang, scores goals.
And it's nice options for England to have. They've got a few options from the bench. I think we said before, they've got Vardy to come on, Rashford and people like that. So, you know, looking pretty positive from the first, sort of, from these two friendlies. Southgate's England looks quite good.
Although Harry Maguire should be captain. I will bang that drum until then.
5 minutes in, we have the Maguire for captain campaign underway.
another not a shout for captain, but I also was really impressed with Rashford and Loftus-Cheek in particular and the way they worked. And I think Southgate has sort of really emphasised on trying to build sort of partnerships. And this is why we have these two 11s and different pockets of players that can be bought on. Those two were playing lots of 1-2s in the half space. And Ruben Loftus-Cheek in particular, he was the most fouled player on the pitch at the time. And he didn't fail a single pass. 34 out of 34. So as a fan of him myself, I was really pleased to see him sort of take his chance and sort of say to Southgate, right, now you've got Delph, Lingard, Dele and Ruben Loftus-Cheek to fill those two midfield spots in front of either Henderson or Dyer. And I wouldn't say it's an embarrassment of riches because you look at other midfields in the World Cup and they're not up quite to scratch. But
for how Southgate likes to play, he's got a lot of options.
And for England, I think we have players that play specific roles and they can interchange brilliantly. So, I'm excited.
Yeah, it's a far cry from the days when there was actual world-class talent in there, but they didn't know how to play together. You know, Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes, amazing players. None of them could cohabitate in the midfield. These are different. Delph, I thought, another shout out. Delph was really good. Delph
was very good,
really brilliant. And I think honestly, if all was fair, I think he would push Dyer and Henderson for that for starting at the base of midfield because I think he offers much more with the ball than either of those two do. Not quite as solid defensively, but better with the ball, definitely.
Definitely some good options. And Dean, we're all being fairly positive here. Has that been reflected in terms of people back in England, do you think, this summer?
Well, you always get patriotic money for England in a big tournament. Most people know that when they put it on, it's gone. I think we're just waiting for when and if it all goes wrong. But I think what the panel there making a point about this current England squad is that it perhaps maybe doesn't have one or two world-class players that they've had in other tournaments. But then also with that, out the window goes the egos. And if you don't have egos in the squad, which I don't think we really do anymore, you have players willing to play for the shirt and for each other. And I think that is something that Southgate needs to be commended on. Deadwood seems to have been gone out of the squad. Now, they might have been great players, but it's replaced them with a lot of young, hungry individuals. And I think if we have a very much a rotation system in place, and I think it was mentioned there about the 2-11s, I think that's reality for England. So if they do need to be tight, you'll get the likes of Dyer and Henderson playing and kind of swamping the midfield with a little bit more of sideways passing. But I'd love to see a team where Rashford and Sterling got on the same pitch at the same time, because if we went and did that against a couple of the smaller sides, you talk about patriotic money for England, it would start coming if they wanted to win their first couple of games by a few goals. And I think that's very possible. England currently 16-1 to win the tournament. It's probably a fair reflection, I think, but you know, there'd be worse places to have your 5 or your 10. I think you get a run for your money this year.
Absolutely, yeah. I think a lot of people, obviously, last few weeks, there seems to be some positive momentum going. So I think it's nice to have that. I think if it was Big Sam's England, we'd be having a very different conversation right now. So I think that's, you know, very positive. And like you said, credit to Southgate for that. Just moving on slightly to, obviously, one of England's most important players, their captain, Harry Kane.
Big Harry.
Mo, do you think he's the best centre-forward going into the World Cup?
No.
And why not?
look, Harry Kane's a phenomenal footballer. He's had an incredible season, but ultimately, what we had to take in hand, this is his best ever season, right? 41 goals, amazing, right? This is Luis Suarez's worst ever season. He scored 31 goals. Robert Lewandowski scored, I can't remember how many goals exactly, but those two did not play well in terms of their potential. They still had great seasons. And those two, one thing we've seen before is they're good at tournaments. Luis Suarez is incredible, his last two World Cups. You know, so look, Kane is amazing, and I think what we need to do is just accept Kane. Kane is world class striker. There's no doubt about that. No one's questioning that anymore. You know, whether or not he's the best, I think, is irrelevant. What he is he's the best fit for England because he can play a little bit, he can score a little, he can score with his head, he can score with his feet. He's what Jake has the exact numbers I forget, but he scored left foot, right foot, head. A really great balance of those goals. You know, whether he's the best in the world or not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's irrelevant, really.
England should stop being obsessed with this sort of idea of is he the best or not. He's the best for England, and that's all that matters. He's phenomenal. He seems like he's obsessed with individual talent, but he doesn't seem to be arrogant about it. Individual achievements. Like, he wants that goal scorer thing, but he doesn't seem to be. He doesn't play like he is, if that makes any sense. Like, you know, you'd think a player, oh, I want to win the Golden Boot, I want to win this, I want to win that. You'd think he would just be selfish and always shooting. He's not. He plays with his teammates, he passes to teammates. He is a phenomenal striker and absolutely what England need. And I think whether or not he's the best is irrelevant. I think he's perfect for England.
Yeah, you mentioned the stat there. I think it's Harry Kane became the first player in Premier League history to score 10 plus goals with both feet and 5 plus headers in a season. So there's no doubt in that, you know, as an all-round striker that England had in the last few tournaments, he's up there with, you know, the best we've had in quite a long time.
He's the best England have had since Shearer. That's no doubt about it.
I think with him, though, I don't think it's an obsession with wanting to say he's the best. I just feel like that episode about claiming the goal and stuff that got really tedious really quickly. I think people sort of started forgetting how good he actually was because they just wanted to talk about the stuff that had happened off the pitch. And and against Nigeria, again, he didn't play against Costa Rica. And I think that's the nuance between him and Vardy. But against Nigeria, he was actually dropping so deep as well. And you see Kane for England play, and for Spurs as well. He's becoming that number 10. He's actually wearing a 10 shirt, obviously not for England this summer, but he's dropping deep and he can pass it. Some of the passes, I remember Spurs did obviously it's a YouTube highlight clip, so all the good passes go in there. But some of the passes he was playing were incredible, and a lot of them were to Dele Alli as well. So that's another reason why I think your first 11, you have Kane and you have Dele, although they're not on the... Although you could argue that Dele Alli's not in the best form out of those midfield options we mentioned before. I think Harry Kane, Dele Alli, that synergy is going to be vital. And yeah, I think Harry Kane... I personally think there aren't many better strikers in the world at the moment anyway. He does everything and he can finish with any part of his body. And that's what we need going forward. So I think he's going to be vital in the group stages and just hopefully that he plays well enough.
Absolutely. And Dean, are you a fan of Harry Kane? And is it for the top goal score odds and stuff? I imagine he's getting quite a lot of attention.
You know, he's the same price as England are to win the tournament outright. 16-1 to be top goal scorer. And I think with Harry Kane, and it was mentioned there as well, like his all-round game has come on an absolute bundle. If he's not the best striker on the planet at the minute, then you've only really got a Ronaldo and a Messi. They're very different players to a Harry Kane, but you'd want them in your side. After that, I think you would want Harry Kane in your team. So he's in there at 16-1. Favourite for the top goal scorer is Lionel Messi at 9-1. Neymar's 10s. Griezmann's there at 12s. Ronaldo, of course, would be in there. He's at 12-1. And then you've got the likes of Lukaku and Harry Kane. Easy group game. Will help them get a start, so they should be on the board anyway by the time they get to the big game against Belgium. I'd imagine Harry Kane will be very, very popular. 16-1 he is, and you can actually double these up. So England and Harry Kane, to top score, and England to win the World Cup, 80-1.
Oh, that's everyone's dream, isn't it?
That was my next question, to be honest, after our conversations so far.
Nicely related, aren't they? If Harry Kane has a good tournament, England will do okay. So 80-1, that's where they are. If you fancy the favourites, of course, Brazil and Neymar, 25-1. One way to get a little bit more value out of that outright market is pick the winner and bag the goal scorer.
Absolutely. Good stuff. So we're going to just, obviously, you mentioned there about the group stage opponents and sort of having weaker opponents might help with a top goal scorer. Obviously, England take on Belgium is one of their biggest challenges in the group stages. You'd like to think we'd almost be through by this point, but we don't know that. It could be a crucial game. So Jake, what would you say are Belgium's strengths and weaknesses and what England will have to watch out for? Because they've got bigger names than England and this is their so-called golden generation like England did have.
This is the thing. Belgium on paper, their starting 11 is so strong. You just look at every position pretty much and you think, that's a world-class, if not on the verge of being world-class player. So they're a scary team to look at. I'm still not that massively impressed by them. I think if you listen to what's said after games every time and you actually watch them play, they can be very slow. Martinez is set on this 3-4-3, which means De Bruyne plays very deep. And although he is if Harry Kane's one of the most complete strikers, De Bruyne has asserted himself as one of the most complete midfielders in the world, I think. So though he's absolutely fine playing in this deeper position, he bemoans the tactics sometimes. I think it was... late 2017. I can't remember exactly who the friendly was against now, but he spoke after the game. Oh, it was Mexico, and he just said Mexico were just so much better tactically than us. And he said, and that's quite obviously quite brave to say when your manager is setting out those tactics. But De Bruyne is arguably their best player, and he needed to be vocal about it. And he was doing it more to spur on his teammates as well. So their strengths are the fact that yes, they have. Obviously, De Bruyne in the side, they have Lukaku, Mertens and Eden Hazard as a front three. Now, as front threes go, that's pretty much all you could ask for. Two diminutive, really agile attackers behind, again, another complete centre-forward that can run in behind and also hold the ball up. So their attack is dangerous, and And the one of their strengths is when they do play against teams that match them in terms of 3-4-3 or a 3-5-2 or something of that ilk, they're very comfortable. And unfortunately, that's what Gareth Southgate has said we're going to do.
And that's also what England struggle with against Nigeria.
Yeah,
as well,
exactly. So that's why the Belgium match in itself for England could be a difficult one. Mm. Although if I were going to pick a team to go further, I would actually say England over Belgium. And I don't think Belgium will do that well because, as De Bruyne mentioned, against Mexico, when teams play three-man midfields against Belgium, De Bruyne and Witsel, who usually plays over Moussa Dembele, which is bizarre in itself, I think, they just have too much to do. And they've got Thomas Meunier playing right wing back, who is very good going forward. He got a hat-trick in qualifying and got 5 assists as well. So he's a very good option going forward. But they've got him right wing back and Yannick Carrasco left wing back, who is a winger, who is an attacking winger. And when they get matched up, it works. But when teams start playing that 4-3-3 and you pin 3 forwards against Vertonghen, Alderweireld and company, if he's fit, although they're very 3 good centre-backs, you don't want a 3-on-3 matchup. And that's what you do if you play 4-3-3. And as they go through the tournament, Belgium will face Brazil, who play 3 in midfield. Belgium could face Spain, who play 3 in midfield. So they could get unpicked really quickly. But the England game is probably, we're going to play to all their strengths, which is worrying.
I would say Belgium win the group, but then I agree with Jake, England will probably go further because his first team plays 4-3 against them with any sort of competence. I mean, you know what? Tunisia could give Belgium a problem because Tunisia will play 4-1-4-1 like they did yesterday, or 4-3-3 like they did against Spain. And, you know, they could give Belgium a lot of problems.
So do you think, my next question is basically like the biggest banana skin out of the first two will be Tunisia 100 for England?
I mean, if you watch watch them play Spain, they are rough, they are physical, they don't give you anything. This is a friendly, and they were kicking 7 bells out of Spain. So you can imagine in a competitive game, they'll really go for it. But you know what they are? They're so organised. Nabil Malouli has organised them so perfectly. They defend compactly with two lines of four. Like, they play a 4-1-4-1 essentially, and they break out, and they've got Naim Sliti, you know, who's a winger, really attacking midfielder, as a striker. They drop back and they break forward into the flanks and into the channels when they attack. They go in behind fullbacks, right? So England have fullbacks, but England have a 3 at the back, and I think that could be a problem for England because I think they could outnumber England in the midfield, and then they could hit them in the break, and then they're pulling Carl Walker and Harry Maguire out of the central zone, and if they get a sort of overload in those positions, they could cause problems. I think Tunisia are definite banana skins, but I think, you know, opening game of the World Cup, so first of all, there's going to be some nerves. Yeah. Harry Kane's, but if Harry Kane nabs an early goal, that will change the face of the game because then they'll have to come out and play, and then England can make hay while the sun shines. But, you know, if England don't score an early goal, Tunisia will sit deep, and they will not come out, they'll not feel the need to come out, they'll sit deep, hit on the break, and they could definitely have some joy against England. That's the big banana skin.
Panama, though? Yeah. Well, Panama have Roman Torres, don't they?
Yeah.
The so-called heaviest man at the tournament, although he made a case of showing that it was all muscle by the looks of it. But just a little point on Naim Sliti as well, is someone that I haven't watched. I can't say that he's going to do certain things, but in terms of looking at like what numbers he posted this season, in terms of the best dribblers in Europe, Eden Hazard, who I've mentioned for Belgium, he's probably going to be their key player. Of people to attempt a certain amount of dribbles, or like the prolific dribblers, Eden Hazard operates at a 70% success rate, which is incredible. The second best on that list was actually Naim Sliti, playing in Ligue 1 this season. So they've got someone that can carry the ball very well, can carry it often, and can carry it very efficiently. So they could use him as a vehicle to push England back, which could be a worry.
Absolutely. And Dean, I'm guessing with the sort of the group betting, it's England and Belgium that are the, depending on what order that people are backing, I'm presuming Belgium 1 and England 2nd. Is that the way people are going?
Yeah, I mean, to win Group G, Belgium currently 4-5 favourites, England 6-5, and then it's any price you want, really, Tunisia and Panama, obviously. Yeah. With their match, though, that's coming up, of course, on the 28th, England v Belgium, you can back England at 15-8, and 11-8 is the price for Belgium, which I think is kind of out of kilter when you consider that squad that Belgium do have, and it's been well talked about just there. The one weakness maybe in Belgium's armoury is the manager. Not sure whether any of us would have fancied Martinez would be lifting a World Cup as manager of any international country based on what we've seen him do in England. But if he can get that team, I mean, any team in this tournament with a De Bruyne and a Eden Hazard in it, you'd be happy to have one. They've both, and they've got lots of other good players. So I think the Belgium value, if you do like them as a side, is to probably to beat England in that final game. But not many people might agree with, and I'm English, obviously, so that's a difficult thing to say. But I think 11-8 about them taking the last group game looks a little bit of value. Of course, they've got a couple of games, so we'll see them line up before that. But Belgium are in there for the outright, so 11-1, England 16-1. 11-8 about them to beat England, I think, is a decent enough bet towards the end of the group stages.
Absolutely, and especially a lot will tell in the first couple of games. If they're already through, obviously it'll all potentially change, and if both teams have won their other games, it'll obviously be a very different game.
Yeah, if Belgium rotate, just one last point, if Belgium rotate, I don't think they've got any good options. I think their first 11 is incredible, but when you start looking at what they're bringing, on, it's really uninspiring. So
No Nainggolan.
Yeah, no Nainggolan, and as well, like young players like Youri Tielemans, Fellaini coming on for some last minute long balls, like it's not very inspiring. Whereas, as we said, four times already now, England squad is actually good.
And on that note, just to finish, round up this first section, in all honesty, how far do you think England will go? If I'm not going to just jump out, I think quarterfinals, Jake?
Yeah, so I think we need to come second in the group. We need to come second in the group because I think watching Germany recently, if we get them in the quarterfinals, I think we could beat them if we play Vardy up front because we can counter-attack them. So quarterfinals, yes, I think is sort of like the safe, what I would say.
Yeah,
but if we finish second and get Germany, I think we could actually beat them. But that might just be the pre-tournament excitement speaking.
Potentially. Mo, what do you reckon? What are you saying?
I mean, part of me wants to say round of 16 because I think Colombia, but Colombia aren't looking as good. I would have said that 2 months ago, I would have said round of 16. Like Colombia would have beat England, but I don't think Colombia are looking too hot right now. I think quarterfinals definitely. I do not share Jake's enthusiasm that England could beat Germany. I'd like to. I think that would be really, really interesting. It'd be a real turn up for the books. But, you know, unless Harry Kane does a mad one or Marcus Rashford.
We beat them before with Kane and Vardy up front.
It's true.
That was the formula.
It's true. No, I mean, there is. And look, Southgate, if any manager, I think any manager would do that, would be Southgate. He would take the risk and say, okay, Kane, maybe you can drop number 10. Maybe we'll put Vardy up front. No, I think Germany as well. Germany aren't playing well right now either, but Germany have that tournament mentality. Once they get into the swing of it, they'll be dancing in the street. Actually, maybe they won't though. They're really looking good.
He's changing his mind. Jake's wearing him down.
Semi-finals.
There we go.
I've got a persuasive voice.
There we go. Semi-finals.
Dean, is it quarterfinals, semi-finals that people are backing? Do you think? And what's your personal viewpoint?
Well, the favourite for England is definitely the 11-8 on to make the quarterfinals. Yeah, so that looks very, very likely. And I think that seems to be the panel pick as well. But if you get to the semi-finals and you fancy them making it 11-4 to make the semi-finals and the final itself 15-2, look, we can dream.
We can. And obviously, let's wrap the first section there, talking about England, bring on the World Cup. Okay, next up, we're going to look at the contenders for the World Cup. We're going to look at the best starting 11, a bit of squad depth, maybe talk a little bit about managers, and then eventually ask who's going to win the World Cup. So we're going to start with the best starting 11 on paper. We're going to go to Jake for that one first. Who are you most looking forward to seeing and who's got the best 11 on paper?
Yeah, I think I'm going to sort of float around it a bit to start with because I think this tournament, whether it's injuries or just missing that one player, I don't think there's one starting 11 that hasn't got sort of like a kink in it at the moment. You look at Brazil and obviously their star right back got injured, so that sort of really reduces their overall quality, I think, in terms of names on a team sheet. Spain obviously looked very good, but Diego Costa's name in itself is a very good one. I just don't know if he's a bit ill-fitting. When I watch them, I feel like he isn't on the same wavelength, and that's not to say he's not a good player, it's just sort of that fit. And Germany as well, I just said that England could potentially beat them, and that's because I think their centre-backs, obviously Boateng and Hummels, have got this world-renowned reputation, but I think they're looking weaker than they have been before, and that sort of makes me think Germany aren't as scary as they usually are.
What's the goalie situation as well with Germany?
Well, yeah, no, the thing is, their goalie is they could put either one in, and I'd say it's world class. So it's not. I don't think that's a kink. I think it's just the fact that they've got a ridiculous choice to make. And then I look at France, and I think actually it is their goalkeeper that I'm more worried about. And then you could argue, as I'm a massive fan of Olivier Giroud, but you say, are they a better team when they play Griezmann up front and Mbappe and Dembele beside? So I think in terms of starting 11, I probably would say Spain's because, as I said, it's more of a systematic fit, where I don't think that Diego Costa is on a team sheet, he's brilliant. So I probably think Spain's starting 11 is one of the best. And then I think Belgium's, actually, going back to the point I mentioned, they're a wing-back off being up there as well. It's just sure. after that they have nothing. So I think all the big contenders in this team are missing that maybe one thing that makes it even harder to predict.
Yeah, Spain have the best. They've got the best goalkeeper. They've got the best defence. They've got the best midfield. Their striker is Diego Costa, who's not the best, but he's really good. Mm. And they have Iago Aspas coming in, who's got, what is it, like 5 goals and 4 assists yeah, in his last 10 games. You know, he's incredible. He's going to have a really interesting break. He's 30 years old, so it's weird, but I think he might be one of the breakout stars of the summer. In terms of squad depth, France have the best squad. Like, it's like, yeah, it's close. Like... Their options are just utterly absurd for every position you can think of, really. I mean, you know, we say Giroud is... he's not the most overwhelming, like, incredible player, but you know, he's got an incredible record for France, always produces for them. You know, they've got their only weakness is goalkeeper, but even then that's partly because they're still clinging to Lloris when they've got Adeola there, who's probably better than Lloris.
Would you think he should start?
I would start him. Lloris is a clear weak point. I mean, you saw the goal they conceded against the USA. That was just, I mean, Sidibe didn't cover himself in glory, but it was still, there's no way that shot should have gone in. You know, it's like, Lloris, what are you doing? And yeah, he's repeatedly, he's their captain, which is just the weirdest thing. No, Spain are the best starting 11. And I think Brazil's would have been close if they'd started Dani Alves. But I think even then, you look at their central midfield and it's all workhorses. And it works, but it's, in terms of pure quality, Spain are untouchable.
Yeah, but they've been putting Coutinho in there. That sort of spices it up. So when you look at Brazil now, you obviously have Casemiro, Paulinho, Coutinho, Willian, Jesus, and Neymar, bad. Which, if we're saying that's not...
Oh, no, it's still pretty goddamn good.
I do agree with you. I'm just trying to paint the point that there's quite a good few starting 11s at this tournament. And Spain probably does pip it. And then, France, you think up front, you've got Griezmann, Mbappe, Dembele, Thomas Lemar, Florian Thauvin, Nabil Fekir. And then you go into midfield, Matuidi, Pogba, Kante, and Nzonzi.
It's ridiculous.
They've got two good right backs, two good left backs.
They left Martial at home and justifiably.
And Lacazette.
And Martial and Lacazette left at home and justifiably. Like, they didn't deserve to go into that squad. That's how good the France. And Payet got injured on the eve of the tournament. He could make it. So much quality in the French.
We left Jonjo Shelvey at home, so everyone's left those big players at home. Dean, we mentioned quite a few teams there, but I mean, Spain and Ish, I think the general consensus is that Spain maybe have the best starting 11. Do you like the look of those?
You mentioned all the top teams at the top of the market, as you would expect. No one really talking about Argentina. Is that because most people think they are the one-man band in Lionel Messi?
I think the thing with Argentina is, they've got a really, really good coach, but the thing is, he's only had 6 months to work with them. He's a real... Jorge Sampaoli is a brilliant tactician, but he needs like a year, maybe more, to really sort of get the team advanced into his beat. Yeah, they have the best player in the world by a million miles, Lionel Messi, but... Around him, their talent is just, it's kind of limited. They've got Aguero up front, great world-class striker, but doesn't really do it for Argentina. Angel Di Maria is not what he was. He's a bit inconsistent, injury-prone. They lost Manuel Lanzini to injury. I think he could have been a really good midfielder for them. That's a big problem. In defence, Otamendi and Fazio technically are great defenders, but I don't think they're very compatible. Defensive midfield, their best option is Biglia. They've taken Mascherano. The quality on their team, basically, as the players, look at their team, they've lost Sergio Romero in goal. That's a big problem. Messi's great. Aguero is potentially great if he plays up to it. And Tagliafico is a really good left back. That's basically it in terms of overwhelming quality in their side. Maybe Giovanni Lo Celso in midfield. They've got the best player in the world, and they could, if they all rally around him, they could make it happen because they've got a great coach too. But I mean, it's not looking like.
You think you'd be surprised if it all came together?
Yeah, they could be in trouble. They could. I don't know. It's hard. You can't tell because they've got Messi. With Messi, anything's possible. But
They are one of those sides where if one man turns up and dominates a game, they certainly will be in the mix. Argentina, of course, have such a great history with it all. I think the best 11 on paper, Belgium, if they can get them all fit and on the pitch for the whole of the tournament, I think they're probably the most interesting side, one of the ones I'd be looking forward to anyway. And then Brazil, if Brazil play up and play Samba football with the quality they have in their ranks, I'd definitely put them at the top of the list. But the market agrees.
Absolutely, yeah. And on that note, I was going to ask everyone who they think will go all the way and win the World Cup. I'm sure you've had a few different opinions on this over the last few weeks. Mo's changed his mind in the last 10 minutes. Jake, who are you going for?
I actually, there was one moment where I sort of decided that they would win it, and everything that I see keeps confirming it. And I think Brazil going all the way. Their record under Tite is incredible. 47 goals, 16 clean sheets, 5 goals conceded, and they've never conceded more than once in 21 games under him. So that's not just good pre-tournament form, that is incredible form. And I think with Neymar coming back to fitness, they have to be the favourites.
Yeah, I would have said Brazil, but I think what's going to happen is they're playing so well right now. They've been so well, so consistently well. There's always little chinks in the game. I think there's a moment coming where they're going to be the favourites. They'll probably play the most attractive football throughout the tournament. But I think there's just little chinks in their armour against the counter attack, against teams that dominate, that push up and press them. I just think Spain will come along with more tactical rigidity, more tactical fluidity, more midfield intelligence, more midfield passing, and I think they'll upset them in the final. I think Spain will win the World Cup.
Do you think what happened 4 years ago, the 7-1, if they get to the latter stages, that will be in their heads at all?
Completely different kind of manager. That was all Luis Scolari and playing with emotion and, oh, I've got to get up for it, and that backfired on the fact. TJ is a calm man, he's a rational man, he's a tactician. They'll play with a much calmer demeanour, but I just think there's a couple of tactical holes in their team with regards to the way they can build out from the back, defend against the press, and defending its counterattacks. And I think Julen Lopetegui, who's a really smart coach for Spain, will pick up on that. Spain have overwhelming quality in those areas in terms of pressing, in terms of midfield ability. By the time the tournament is ended, all the Real Madrid players will be fit, sharp again after their Champions League exploits. They're not sharp right now, so Spain might start off a bit rocky. But I think Spain will have the quality in the end to tell. I think they'll just figure Brazil out. They'll exploit those little kinks and turn Brazil over.
Indeed, I'd say you mentioned there, I think Brazil are top of the betting, is that right?
Sure are. It's a close thing though. Brazil 4-1 to win it outright. Germany are 9-2. Spain then at 6-1. France are also at 6-1. And that's where most of the pre-tournament money has gone. A lot of people are very impressed with that squad depth, and it's been well discussed just there. Argentina 9-1, probably, as we discussed there, maybe more of a one-man band than the other teams at the top of this market. Belgium 11-1. England 16-1. 25-1 for Ronaldo's Portugal. And then it's 28-1 bar those. The winners probably in those eight teams, though, isn't it, lads?
Absolutely. You would think so, certainly. So that's the outright World Cup, the better favourites, the main contenders. And we look forward to seeing how it pans out this summer. Okay, next up, we're going to look at the dark horses of the World Cup, the surprise package and a potential flop of the tournament. And we're going to start with Mo on this one. Who is your dark horse? And just to clarify, dark horse, we kind of mean someone who maybe could go all the way, but no one's really talking about too much.
Yeah.
So who are you going for?
I mean, there aren't many dark horses at the World Cup, really. But so I'm just going to say England. Because I think you look at the fate, there are like four favourites. And then there are a bunch of teams that aren't going to win the World Cup. And in between those two, there's only really England and Belgium, to be honest. Like, they're the favourites. There's the also-rans. There's no one you can see maybe stepping up. There's no Chile, who are thrilling and fun to watch. There's no, Colombia, they're just in such bad form right now. So it's hard to really say. I mean, obviously, though, they could have done. They've got a good young team, but they're not really playing that well right now. Poland, Senegal, there's no dark. England are the dark horse. Yeah, they're good. They're a very talented squad, great manager, tactically versatile, young team. Could go all the way. Belgium, great starting 11. Manager, he's not the sharpest, but he's very good at engineering those 7-10 game runs. Remember when Wigan, when he always keep them up with those amazing runs in March?
Yeah.
You know, so he could get them on a roll, but of course, as Jake said, play midfield 3 against them, they're in trouble. So, yeah, I would say England or Belgium.
Exactly. We mentioned the England odds before, Dean. I think Belgium to make the semi-finals. Is there some marks on that? See if they can maybe
there
live
is,
up to their billing.
You can get Belgium to make the semi-finals at 2-1.
Cool. And is there anyone you've found out of England? Do you think England can get quarters or semis, like Mo says?
I think they're nailed on for the quarters. I'd love them to get through to the semis, because then in tournament football, anything can happen. We're guaranteed at least either a Titanic match where we go out on horrific penalties or something horrible like that, or an absolute dreamland. And, it'll either be a film or a commemoratory single.
A sad film.
Yeah, exactly.
Public holidays to either celebrate or mourn, I suppose.
Look, England to make the semis 11-4. You can't really see them getting further than that unless we are in dreamland. But Belgium, 2-1 to make those semi-finals. And if you fancy them to make the quarters, which looks very, very likely indeed, 13-8 on, or 8-13.
I just think on that point as well, I really can't stress enough how I think finishing second in that group is actually the better draw. If England finish top, we could end up getting Brazil in the quarterfinals. Yeah, can't see us winning that.
Yeah.
And then you get, is it Spain next in that side?
Yeah.
Yeah, or France even.
No, sorry, so it's not Spain.
Yeah, France. And then second, I think, so in terms of getting to the semi-finals, I think you've got more chance if you finish second. Mm-hmm. And then with this year, with those four clear favourites, I think wherever you finish, you've got to play at least the one of the two favourites in the semis. So quarterfinals, I think, finish if Southgate can engineer that, then we might be all right.
Oh, I think Mo's described him as a wizard in the last week or so, so I think you can do it.
Man is a wizard, man dug down.
And Jake, in terms of a surprise package, like obviously you had Iceland at Euro 2016, yeah. Sort of a team that probably aren't going to win it, but might be like everyone will be talking about it sort of during the tournament. Have you got a couple of people that might fit that?
I've sort of picked two that sort of fit my interests really, and that is Morocco and Serbia.
Yep.
Serbia are the team with the most players that are 23 and under in the tournament. They've got 9. They recently won 5-1, Alexander Mitrovic getting the first hat-trick for the nation since they became an independent nation. And he was incredible in that late run for Fulham, getting to the championship. So they've got him leading the line. He was brilliant in qualifying. They've got Dusan Tadic, who obviously people have almost forgotten about, given how poor Southampton's season was. But again, in qualifying, he was one of the best players in the European qualifying section, not just for Serbia. He's a brilliant playmaker, and obviously cutting in onto that left foot, he'll be able to carve out a few opportunities. And then they've got the man that everyone is talking about at the moment, or will at least be talking about, in Sergej Milinkovic-Savic. The 6'3", I'm more Yaya Toure than I am Zidane, I want to be a playmaker sort of guy. This is one player that I think everyone will be keeping an eye on, because it's most likely that the club you support has been linked with him, and it's been linked with him for about 50 million. He's come back off the season where he scored 12 goals. He's created 50 plus chances. He's winning 100 headers in Serie A. Like, this guy is a complete package, can play in any role in the midfield. As I mentioned just there, he recently got asked about his idols and what he sees himself as. And he said, yeah, I consider myself more of a Yaya Toure than a Zidane, because people have been comparing him to the former Real Madrid manager. And he said he also looked up to countryman Nemanja Matic as well. Mm-hmm. So Serbia have this hulking side. I think we, as for Squawker, we put together the tallest 11.
Yep.
And there are at least 4 Serbia players in there. So they're going to be a scary side. They've got some brilliant young players. So I expect them to do really well and finish second in that group with Brazil. Mm-hmm. And then my other team is Morocco, who have 6 players that are 23 and under. And obviously, being an African nation, you never know what you're going to get with those. Tunisia are obviously the highest ranked African nation, which I think took some people by surprise. But Morocco are actually on an 18-game unbeaten run at the moment, which only Spain can better in terms of active streaks. So I think you've got this side that's well-engineered. They are defensive, first and foremost. It's usually a 4-4-1-1, sorry. But they've got 2 really exciting players. One is Hakim Ziyech, who is the Ajax chief creator. He created the most chances in the Eredivisie last season. He got the most assists in the Eredivisie last season. Again, he's one of those people with a lovely left foot to watch, and he'll be their main creator. And they've also got another young, exciting player called Amin Harry, who is currently at Schalke. He is the sort of player that you have to foul to actually get the ball off. He's one of the most foul players in Europe's top 5 leagues when you talk about per 90 minutes. A brilliant dribbler and just oozes flair. So Morocco, that combination of defensive solidity and tactical structure, as well as sort of drip feeding in these really exciting players within it, those two teams, I think, again, you can't see them going on to win it, but they definitely should make a case to get out the groups, and then maybe they can cause a surprise in the last 16 or even quarterfinals.
So Dean, on that, Morocco and Serbia, have we got any odds on them or any betting on them to make the quarterfinals maybe?
Good cases made there. Morocco 11-1 to make a quarterfinal, and Serbia slightly more fancy 6-1 to make the quarterfinals. So good cases made about them. They'll have to cause a little bit of a shock in a last 16 matchup, but good cases made. 6s and 11s.
I would say also I'd like to add Peru. I think Peru are going to take a lot of people by surprise. No one's really talking about them. They're a really, really well-drilled defensive side under Ricardo Gareca. They've got these centre-back duos, these old, Ramos and Rodriguez, these Alberto Rodriguez, Christian Ramos, old, got experienced guys, got over 100 caps each, really, really solid defensively. You know, Alberto Rodriguez is, what, 34 years old, he's captain, he's been there forever. You know, they're a really solid defensive unit. They've got Luis Advíncula right back, who's just a freight train of a right back. Like, if you remember Maicon from like 2010, this is like that kind of player, absolute freight train. You know, Peru, they're really good in tournaments as well. They had a really, really ropey 2016 in qualifying, so that's why they had to wait till like the last day to secure the qualifying. But since 2017, they've actually been really good. And I mean, in the Copa America 2011, they finished third. In 2015, they finished third. Got a bit of unlucky as well with some bad decisions, and they finished in the quarterfinals in 2016. They're really good at tournaments. They're really organised defensively. They counter-attack well. I think they're going to shock Denmark. I think they'll finish second in that group behind France. And I think they could, if Group D goes according to plan and Argentina, you know, don't make, if Argentina don't win that group, if Croatia win that group, I think Peru could definitely beat Croatia in the round of 16, get to the quarterfinals. Whether they get past the quarterfinals, I don't know. But they can. I think they can definitely get to the quarterfinals, especially because Paulo Guerrero has been particularly eligible to play in the World Cup after he was his drugs ban was delayed.
Yeah. Yeah, so Dean, for Peru to get out of the group, is there some good value there and even sort of go further than that potentially?
Well, Peru actually to make that quarterfinal is a 9-1 chance. That's not a bad bet at all based on that opinion given there. They're 10-1 in their group to win the group, but of course they're in there with France, so they've got a tricky one to they can get out of the group for sure, but 9-1 about the quarters might be interesting. I actually think Croatia are a live one for a quarterfinal place. I think they'll go very well. We've seen plenty of money on them at 33-1 for the outright. So that seems to be the darling of this tournament in terms of outright punting and trying to find a chance. They're 2-1 to make the quarters, Croatia, and 11-2 to make the semis. They could be a dark horse in this tournament based on what we've seen from customers' bets so far.
Absolutely, yeah, 33-1 is a big price.
Yeah, I think you just look at their name, again, names on a team sheet, they're actually quite good. They've obviously got Modric in that side, Mandzukic.
Incredible.
Yeah, Mandzukic, Perisic, they've got some very good players. I just, again, watching them, I'm not as, again, they're nicer to look at than they are to watch in action.
Sure.
So that's, again, they definitely could be dark horses if they turn it around, but that's why I'd favour sort of more exciting about Serbia and Morocco. I think they can actually offer good value when you're watching them as well.
Absolutely. And on the flip side, which team do we think is going to bomb? Completely disappoint? I mean, looking at the highest ranked teams are Germany, Brazil, Belgium, Portugal, Argentina. You see one of those disappointing?
I would say relative to their ranking, Portugal maybe as well. But I think no one's really expecting them to. Everyone knew Euro 15 was kind of a fluke. Everyone knows that. They're not really expecting much from Portugal. Although they've got some good young players. I'm sure Jake can tell you about more. The big flops for me, the big chances to flop. Obviously Argentina. Because they are, you know, if Messi, frankly, even if we perform super heroics, who knows what happens with Messi, you know, because they've got so many holes in their team, so many problems, so many issues going on, you know, who knows. But also, I think Germany are very, very, you know, their centre-backs aren't as strong. Obviously, Josh Kimmich is basically superhuman right now and should be respected as such, but their left-back situation isn't the most impressive. In midfield, Toni Kroos and Sami Khedira aren't as dominant as they were 4 years ago. Ozil is... he can't be as bad as he was in Brazil. So I think that's one positive for them. But, you know, they left Leroy Sané at home, who, okay, doesn't necessarily fit into the starting 11, but he certainly would have been a great option off the bench. They've got a great goal scorer in Timo Werner, but he's unproven at the World Cup. Müller's obviously a great World Cup guy, but he's not playing in the best form. It's just a lot of things need to click for Germany. They're not playing well right now. They haven't played well for a long time, as a matter of fact, really. And I just think, and as Jake pointed out earlier, their centre-backs, man, those two are nailed on in terms of reputation. They're not as good. And also, I would say, if they bring Neuer in, I don't think Neuer is anywhere near his best because he hasn't played for a year. And I think if they start Neuer, which I think they will, because Lohr said, if I take him, I'm starting him. And I think they're taking him. So I think that's a problem. De Stegen is playing out of his mind. Best form of his life. He should be starting for them. Obviously, Neuer, when he's in form, is better. But the man hasn't played for a year. I think Germany could really bomb out. Maybe not in the groups, but I think in the knockout rounds.
Yeah.
Maybe against England.
That's what Jake was predicting.
Yeah, that's sort of the reasons why. But this might not make sense, but I think France, it's not really a flop because I think they'll go relatively far. But I think given their squad, I think Deschamps is not very well liked anyway by France fans. And I think they have the potential to sort of start really well and everyone will be like, yes, Mbappe, Dembele, Griezmann, wow, look at this side. And
maybe
then all of
too early.
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, they're out?
Yeah.
So whether you call that flopping if they do get to a semi-finals is maybe not the right word. I'd agree with Germany that I've just got this weird feeling that they might not do as well as Germany usually do. But again, they probably thrive on proving people the other way around. So I'd say, as a flop, if we can consider them, I'd say Belgium. I just don't think they're going to... They could win the group, which will sort of suit how they did in qualifying. Like, they set one of the records in qualifying with Germany, scoring 43 goals in 10 games, which is only two teams have done, and it was those two. And funnily enough, we're saying those are going to be the flops. So, which is quite odd. They're obviously very good sides, but yeah, Belgium, I can imagine going through and then going out very swiftly, as they did in Euro 2016. Sort of, wow, they were so good in the groups. Then Wales beat them.
Absolutely.
So I sort of think France, Germany and Belgium have that potential to do that, whereas the other teams that we've mentioned in terms of favourites will just steamroll all the way through.
I mean, in the long term, France flopping might be good. To get rid of, get Deschamps out, get Zidane in, win everything for all eternity.
That's inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dean, anyone you think might crash and burn in Russia this summer?
I'd have to echo some of the things said about Argentina already with Messi trying to lead them and the problems they have. If they do flop, one bet that would lead me to would be the top South American team being Brazil at even money. After that, you only have Uruguay, Colombia and Peru, who we've already said we fancy to do a bit better. But whether they'll do better than Brazil is a big question. So even money, Brazil to be top South American team. And I'm leading that in from the flop from Argentina. I think that might be a good bet. I know it's a short enough price, but I fancy you get paid.
No, I think that's decent. Yeah, Brazil to go further than Argentina for sure.
Oh
yeah.
Oh, and Uruguay, good shout for dark horse there. Forgot all about them.
They're in there at 7-1 to be that top South American team, but they'd have to go past Brazil. So that does make that Brazil price look a little bit interesting.
Absolutely, and we certainly look forward to seeing who the dark horses are, who the surprise packages are, and who the potential flops are this summer. Okay, next up, we're just going to go through some of the key markets, the key competitions for the World Cup. We've got Golden Boot, Golden Ball, and Best Young Player. Going to ask each of you who you think might lead the way in these different categories. Start with Golden Boot. 7 of the 10 previous winners did so after scoring 6 goals. Who do you think is going to be in the running? Who do you think is going to take it, Jake?
I think it will be Neymar. After watching these recent games, I just think, wow, he's back. He scored in both his games. And I just think Brazil are going to be sort of leading through him. And based on my prediction, they'll go far. I think he might hit that magic 6 mark.
Quite hard to argue with that, isn't it? But who are you going to go for?
Jesus. I think Gabriel Jesus I agree with Jake on everything he said, except I think Neymar is also very happy being a playmaker, being a passer. I think Gabriel Jesus is the number 9. I think he's going to pick up a lot of scrappy goals. So I think Neymar will score the best goals for Brazil, no question about that. Maybe the most spectacular ones. But I think Gabriel Jesus will bag a couple of very important ones. He should clean up in the groups against the weaker side. I think, he's the number 9 for that team. I'll shout out Timo Werner. I think he'll do well for Germany and, of course, Messi too. But I think Brazil, like Jake says, I think they're going to go all the way to the final. And I think Gabriel Jesus will bag a lot of goals. I think he might get 8.
Absolutely. And Dean, have you got a prediction yourself and sort of the odds for the guys that the guys I mentioned there?
Yeah, well, the Brazilian lads, Neymar's 10-1, his second favourite. Messi is top of the market, 9-1. You've got Griezmann at 12s, Ronaldo is also at 12s. Timo Werner's there at 14s. Gabriel Jesus is 16-1. Harry Kane, 16s. Lukaku, 18s. A bit of value. I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but Diego Costa at 20s. If Spain go deep, he's a decent price at 20-1.
That's not a bad shout.
That's a good shout, to be fair, yeah. And next up, Golden Ball, obviously a player of the tournament. I think previous winners, we've had Messi, Forlan, Zidane in the last 3 tournaments. Jake, who's going to be the star man in Russia, do you think?
It sounds really boring to say because I've just said he's
giving
Golden
Boot.
Yeah,
you can say Neymar again,
aren't you? But I just think, and I'm really excited for it to happen because I think moving to PSG has made, because everyone's sort of, oh, it's PSG, they win everything. Everyone forgot how absolutely incredible Neymar is. And his start of the season was brilliant. He got that injury. To see him coming back, as long as he doesn't break his back in the knockout round again, I think he's going to clean sweep these awards. And for the reason Mo said, I think he will score goals and he'll score beautiful goals, but he'll also be laying on assists, nutmegging players for fun. So I think this could be Neymar's World Cup.
I mean, yeah, Neymar is the magic age, 26, you know, that's what they say. But I agree with you. I think Neymar is the second best player in the world. I think people really forgot that when he went to PSG. Like, there's no one even, he's way behind Messi, number 2, but he's way ahead of everyone else, number 3. No one, yeah, he's phenomenal. But I think what's going to happen is, I think sentiment swayed the people in 2014 when Messi got it. He shouldn't have got it.
Stranger.
But I think, I think it'll happen again. Because I think Spain are going to win the tournament. I think Iniesta, it'll basically be his last match in elite football. He's going to Japan after this, so that'll be it. Last match for Spain. I think Spain will win the World Cup. I think he probably, I think he'll get his second one. I think he'll be phenomenal. He should have won it in 2010, obviously, Forlan got it. I think he'll get it this time as well. I think he's a phenomenal player. I think by the looks of him, he's in great form. He may not play every game. I think Spain might rotate him, handle him well physically, but If he's fit and fresh in the final, I think he'll. There's very few better big game players in the world than Iniesta.
They're gonna make up for all these Ballon d'Or apologies stuff by giving him a FIFA Golden Ball, even though he's played 20 minutes.
Yeah, something like that, basically. Yeah, my man, we've got 30 minutes at least. Come on, but I think they'll be swayed by sentiment. I think Neymar objectively will be the most outstanding player at the tournament. I think you can argue with that. I think Iniesta will probably be one of Spain's standout players, spend and win the tournament, and the voters will.
Oh, Iniesta! A bit of a romantic vote for him,
basically.
So, Dino, I presume is Neymar the top of the betting for this one? I presume.
Sure is, at 8-1. Lionel Messi at 9s, Griezmann 12s, De Bruyne is there at 16s, but Belgium would have to go pretty deep for him to be up for this award, I'd imagine. Ronaldo, if Portugal can put in any kind of run of 16s. Harry Kane would have to be top scorer as well as Golden Ball winner, I think, at 20s. David Silva at 20s, Gabriel Jesus at 20s. I like the shout about Andreas Iniesta, actually. 25-1 he's in there for. And this is going to be a kind of a sentimental thing, possibly. Neymar dominates the tournament. You can see him get it at 8-1, but Iniesta at 25s. I thought one kind of live chance, if France did go all the way, would be someone like Mbappe at 33s, which looked pretty decent price. But you'd have to see Brazil and probably Spain go south early on for that to happen.
And talking of Mbappe, I'm guessing this might be a person you, with this next question, the best young player at the tournament. You want to talk about him, Jake, don't you?
Yeah, it's not going to be anyone else. Even if France don't do that well as a tournament, this guy, he's the second youngest player at the World Cup. Mm. Only Australia's Daniel Arzani is younger. Mm. He's the second youngest player and he's one of the best players at the tournament. I get excited talking about him.
I can tell.
He's genuinely, when you watch him play, France funnel things through him. They play Griezmann and Mbappe behind Giroud and it's just those two on it. And you just think, well, this guy's 19. Recently talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold being 19 and wow, what a really professional guy. Oh, he deserves it so much. He's the model footballer. Mbappe's younger than him. And I love Trent Alexander as well. Again, he shows that we've got a good squad. But this France number 10 is the second youngest player at the tournament. In his professional first team career, he scores or assists every 90 minutes. That's over 119 games. He scored 52 goals and he's got 32 assists. So, again, I can't see him getting beyond Neymar for Golden Ball. Like, he would be almost a second choice. But in terms of Young Player of the Year, I can't imagine him not getting it. Just because he's this brilliant.
You're going to throw anyone else in the mix? I mean,
you can't disagree with that. Mbappe is just ridiculous. I would love to see Ousmane Dembele get up there, but I think he might have to fight to start in the first place. I think, and also spending this year injured, I think really hurt him out. I think he could have been on a similar level of awesome production to Mbappe had he not got injured. But there you go, that's that. But to shout different names, Jesus, again, I think he's the guy that's been top scorer. I think he'll be a great shout for Young Player of the Tournament. Whether he'll get it or not, I don't know. It's hard to see past Mbappe. But, let's say Gabriel Jesus, just for variety's sake.
Absolutely, yeah. And Dean, any particular young players you're looking forward to seeing?
Loftus-Cheek. I think if he gets plenty of game time, I think he's someone who can really come of age in this tournament. And I just hope he does get the opportunity. I think he's a proper, proper ball player and one that, because he hasn't been busy at Chelsea, obviously he's been out playing elsewhere, is a player that we've got to look forward to come through for future tournaments. So I'm really glad he's in the squad. I hope he gets plenty of game time. And I think he could be our live shout for England's young player at a tournament anyway.
There's also Rashford as well. I forgot about that guy. It's Rashford really.
And again, because there's always that odd category, I think Raheem Sterling might fall if he's 23. I don't know if FIFA's is different, but again, he could be a good shout. But Ruben Loftus-Cheek, a man after my own heart, mentioning him. I'm a big fan of him as well. But yeah, Kylian Mbappe, time to come of age, I think.
Timo Werner, Ousmane Dembele, these are all great players. Raheem Sterling, but Mbappe is the one.
Harry Maguire.
Well, maybe.
Well, he's 25.
he's rising. He's not young. He's just rising. Yeah. No, I think... you can't argue with Mbappe. The man's incredible.
Okay, so that's our golden boot, our golden ball, and our young player predictions. You can hold us accountable to those in a few weeks' time. be interesting to see how we all got on. Okay, we're going to finish off with some listeners' questions. Thank you for sending them in to Squawker. We've got one for each of our guests here today. We're going to start with Jake. This is from some of these names this week, man. At Lil Mil X10. What lineup do Argentina have to use to win the World Cup? I'm actually going to go with Mo for that one.
Well, what they have to use or what they're going to play. What they're going to play is they're going to play Willy Caballero in goal. They're going to have Eduardo Salvio right back, Nicolas Tagliafico left back, Otamendi and Fazio centre backs. They play either Mascherano or Biglia in the middle of in a defensive midfield. I don't know which one it's going to be. It should be Biglia, but neither are great options. They'll play Maximiliano Meza because, of course, they lost Manuel Lanzini and they brought up Enzo Perez, but they're probably going to play Maxi Meza and Gianni Lo Celso in midfield, central midfield. They're both, Lo Celso certainly is an attacking, adventurous midfielder. Meza, not so much, but maybe they should play Enzo Perez there. I don't know. And then Messi, Aguero, Di Maria up front. Messi will just come in. Messi's basically going to ostensibly play right wing. Essentially, Messi's going to play central midfield, attacking midfield, right wing, left wing, and up front because that's what he does these days. What they should play is, given the squad he's picked, that formation, they shouldn't play it. They should play maybe Ansaldi right back instead of Salvio. They should definitely not play Mascherano at all. Get rid of him completely. I love Mascherano. He was the best outfielder of the 2014, but he is old. He's past it. He's clearly, and you know, so you put Bigley in there. You put Enzo Perez next to him. You have those two sort of shielding midfield. You have Messi as a number 10 ahead of two man midfield because he's going to drop deep. May as well play him there anyway. And then ahead of Messi, you put three forwards. You put Aguero, you put Di Maria, and you put Cristiano Pavon from Boca Juniors. You know, young, bright attacking midfielder / winger. Very creative. You put him on the right. You put him on. You put Di Maria on the left. You swap him around. Whatever. Aguero up front is your man. Higuain, no, keep him away from the 11, absolutely. That's what they should play. What they will play is the previous 11, you know, but I don't think it's going to be enough. I think they've got too many key problems. They haven't had Sampaoli for enough time. If they'd appointed Sampaoli before they appointed the last manager, give him a year, they could have been favourites, honestly.
Okay, good for that. Next one is from at Nahalaman. Probably got that wrong. thoughts on Brazil starting Gabriel Jesus over Firmino, and also what do you expect from Fernandinho as an impact? Ooh. In the midfield.
I think Tite's just always favoured Gabriel Jesus. Roberto Firmino obviously is sort of Klopp's ideal forward in the sense that he'll drop deep, he'll create, he'll win those tackles, he'll lead the press. Gabriel Jesus is capable of that, very much so. But in terms of Tite's Brazil, Neymar comes so inside and so deep that you don't need your striker to drop that much as well. We saw Firmino coming on getting a goal. We saw Firmino coming on getting an assist in the last two warm-up games for Brazil. So he's definitely going to play a role in the World Cup. But Jesus plays, I think, because his natural movement in terms of the last line of defenders, that poacher's instinct, as cliched as it sounds, he's so good in the box. And that's why I think Tite favours him, because they know they've got Neymar, Coutinho, Willian, all sort of drifting infield using the fullbacks as width, and they don't need that, what Firmino gives, as much. They don't need the link man as much. They need someone that will finish those chances, and that's why Mo's giving him an outside shout to be top scorer, because sure, Jesus will be the one that has to finish everything off. Firmino will come on and can maybe even play with Jesus at times, because he's more of a creator and more of a playmaker. He just plays centrally. But yeah, Tite favours him because it's not necessarily a rigid structure in the sense that people don't move about, but it's very much, these are my three midfielders, I've got two people behind a striker, and you are my number nine.
Yeah, they've defined roles.
Yeah, they've given him that number nine shirt, and Firmino isn't your typical number nine. Famously, he's known as the false nine, so that's why I think Tite favours him. And just one quick another thing on Brazil, they've got Douglas Costa sitting on the bench.
That's true, forgot about him.
William plays because he fulfills that role that Tite wants, and he fulfills that in the formation, but they've got so much firepower coming off. Douglas Costa was one of the best wingers in the Champions League last season. So
I think if Alves was playing, Costa might have had a shout to start, but I think without Alves, they need someone that can actually go right and cross and that's where William is so important.
So yeah, I think Jesus gets the nod because he is that penalty box expert that Tite needs.
I'm sure Firmino will have a say in the tournament at some point.
Yeah, as I said,
sure,
he's been goal and assist in his last two sub-appearances, so no doubt he will be good. But as a starting player, he's always going to give it to that sort of Jesus to move everyone about for Neymar.
Jesus.
And finally, we're going to go to you, Dean, for this one. This is from Shin Axion. It says, outside prediction for the World Cup, the crazier the better. So I don't know if you've maybe got some special markets for us or a couple of bets you've seen gone on that have been outside the norm.
I'm going to give you, it's not really outside the norm, but I'm going to give you a crazy price, because if you fancy Brazil to win the tournament, which I think a few of us do, I certainly do, I think they're decent enough value at 4-1, but that's not it. I think if it happens as it should, then Gabriel Jesus being that top scorer, and he's been well talked about on this podcast as being the man who finishes off everything for Brazil, it's a 33-1 chance that Gabriel Jesus will top score and Brazil will win the World Cup. If you're looking for value, it's a 33-1 chance, which I think you'll get a fantastic run for your money. Neymar's in there at 25s, but I think while he could go and get that golden ball and be heralded as the greatest player in the tournament, I don't think he'll get all the goals. So 33-1 for that. And if football's really coming home, Harry Kane in England at 80-1 is some better.
That's the one to go for, really, let's be honest.
That is crazy, really, isn't it?
That is the crazy, the better. England and Harry Kane, 80-1. Okay, that's all we've got time for this week. But I mean, thanks very much, Dean, for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Yeah, pleasure, lads, and thank you. Hopefully, when it all kicks off, we'll enjoy some serious, serious football.
Absolutely, and thanks to Mo as always.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Can't wait for the World Cup. Here we go.
And thanks to Jake.
Yeah, really good to be on. Thanks.
Thanks very much, guys. See you next time.